names for the Supreme Godhead, man, lion. Krishna is in no ways ordinary. He is always extraordinary. And so he defies all limitations. He defies all what is conceptually possible to our imagination, and that is why he is the Supreme Divine. Hiranyakashipu was a great tyrant, a great demon. This history goes back millions of years, in fact. And he was persecuting the entire earth, but not only the earth, the heavens as well. The universe was under the tyrannical reign of this demon, Hiranyakashipu. His name is also very significant. Hiranya means gold. Kashipu means soft bed. I think there's a James Bond film, Goldfinger. So this is gold, soft bed. That was how he styled himself. Hiranyakashipu gives us some idea of his values. Gold and sex. Money and sex. That was his. That's how. What's your name, sir? Money and sex. Basically. In a more sophisticated, refined way of expressing it. Gold and soft bed. That was his name. And he also styled himself as a rival to God. A rival to Vishnu, a rival to Krishna. Because he was very powerful, powers that we cannot conceive of in our time, in our modern time, because in these times, then even powerful people, they're only powerful on earth. We have some of them have some great wealth, influence, fame, and so on. So they have some power to influence and manipulate the goings on earth. But these are more ancient times, where the personalities were more powerful and they had influence over not only the earth but other planets, higher planetary systems, lower planetary systems as well. So Hiranyakashipu had grown so powerful that he had overthrown the ruler, Indra, of heaven. Indra is described as the king of the devas, the king of the demigods. And Hiranyakashipu was so influential and powerful that he was able to topple Indra from his throne and make claim to it himself. But then he also imposed many sanctions. He decreed that the priests should no longer offer oblations to Vishnu or to Krishna, but rather all oblations should be offered in his name. No one should sing kirtan in glorification of the name of Vishnu or Krishna. They should glorify Mr. Golden Softbed. In the schools, children should be taught of the greatness of Gold Softbed and his prowess, his conquering of different lands, this meant planets, different rulers, such as Indra. So we see small examples of this on the earth even today. Some dictator, they build a cult around themselves, a cult following. We've seen it in Eastern European countries, the USSR, there was a cult around Lenin. Later there was a cult around Stalin. We saw a cult around the dictator of Iraq, a cult around the dictator of North Vietnam. These are small these people are a small time in comparison to Hiranyakashipu. His power and influence cannot be matched by these ants in comparison. But we see even these people of our time, how proud and self-important they become. The leader of Libya at this time. How self-important they become. So Hiranyakashipu, his influence and power was much greater, and so he believed himself to be a valid contender to the offerings of the priests, the glorifications of Kirtan. And how he became so powerful was through great penance, tapasya, yoga, in fact. He stood in great penance for 10,000 years on the tips of his toes, with his hands stretching for the sky, not eating, not sleeping, not drinking. Such terrible penance he was performing, such control he had. That ants built an anthill around his body and in fact ate away his flesh, yeah? His muscle, his marrow. And yet he was able to maintain his life air within a skeleton. The power of his tapas was so great, of his austerity was so great, that fire was shooting out from the top of his head. So basically you have this anthill with fire shooting out the top. Terrible austerity. And it was creating an imbalance in the ecosystem of the universe. Such a concentration of power, of energy, created a universal imbalance. And so when there is a universal imbalance, the devas who are responsible, they are universal administrators. We have a deva for the wind, his name is Vayu. We have a deva for fire, his name is Agni. We have a deva for water, his name is Varuna. Just as in a government, you have a minister for finance, for home affairs, for security, and so on, and education, and so on and so forth. So in the universal administration, there are devas who have different posts, and they are jivas, they are souls like you and I, but very pious souls who have, just as you can become a government minister, so you can also become a universal minister by assuming the post of a deva. And in all likelihood, by all accounts of the Vedic yoga tradition, you have, in fact, held such posts in the past. You have been a deva of some position or another in the past. If we could go back through time, if you had pictures, mug shots through time, you would see yourself as a deva. There I am. God of rain. You would see yourself as a king, you would see yourself as a pauper, as a street sweeper, as a dictator, as a victim. We've been everywhere and done everything. Krishna says in the Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravarti Narjuna, from the highest planet to the lowest, we've all been there, trying to be happy And what we experience is repeated birth and death. So the devas, when there is an imbalance in the universal order, they go to the Supreme Godhead, they go to Vishnu. That is the general course of things. Huh? They go to Vishnu and they say, help! Pahima, they say, help us, save us. And so Vishnu, he says, don't worry. I will soon appear as Ram. I will soon appear as Varaha. I will soon appear as Krishna. I will soon appear as, in this case, Narasimha. So in this case, the devas, they went first to Brahma. Brahma is the grandfather, the creator, secondary creator of the universe. If Brahma can't handle things, then he takes them to see Vishnu. In this case, they went to Brahma. Brahma said, let's see what I can do. He came down to the blazing anthill. He poured water from his kamandalu, from his water pot. And Hiranyakashipu stepped out in a new body. New, powerful, strong body. Full flesh and muscle. Shining with effulgence on account of his years and years of focused attention and tapas. Brahma created the universe through tapas. The rishis, they get so much Brahma tejas through tapas. Hiranyakashipu, he did tapas and he got stepped out of this anthill with this beautiful shining form. Brahma said, what can I do for you? What do you want? Hiranyakashipu, Mr. Gold Soft Bed, he said, I want immortality. Give me the boon that I shall never die. Today, so many small Mr. Gold soft beds. He aspires for the same thing through medicine, technology, advances in science. Give me the boon that I will never die. That is what I want. Here in the Brahma, he replied that I'm very sorry. I can only give you what is in my own, what I have myself. I cannot give you that which I myself do not have. So you're asking for immortality, but the truth of the matter is that I myself must die. Although I am Brahmaji, I have a very long span of life. But it will come to an end at some point. Brahma's one moment is our year. So 100 of our years is just over a minute and a half for Brahma. Brahma has a very long duration of life, but he says, but it will come to an end. I'm not immortal. I too must die. So Hiranyakashipu is not one to give up so easily. He said, then you grant me this. Very clever. Grant me that I'll never die in the day or the night. That's a tricky idea. Brahma says, Tatashtu, so be it. Hiranyakashipu says, grant me that I will never die inside or outside. Okay. Grant me that I will never die on the land, in the water, or in the sky. Grant me that I will never be killed by a human being or an animal. or of God. Rama says, Tathashtu, so be it. And Hiranyakashipu raises his hands in victory and says, I am immortal. I, Hiranyakashipu, am immortal. He thought he had tricked Rama. Maybe he had. He thought he had tricked Vishnu, that he hadn't. Considering himself to have become immortal, he set about conquering the universe and establishing a tyrannical reign where he oppressed worship of Vishnu. Actually, he set about trying to find Vishnu. He shouted out, Vishnu, Krishna, where are you? You are hiding. You have hidden yourself in the hearts of the living entities in fear of me. Come out and fight, let me kill you, and then I can really establish myself as the Supreme Godhead. Meanwhile, Hiranyakashipu, he had a son. In fact, while he was performing his penance and austerity, his wife, Kayadu, she was pregnant. And the Devas, they became afraid. We have Hiranyakashipu Jr. incubating in the womb, in the oven. When he is born, then he will be even worse than his father. So we need to abort. We need to abort this child. Or we will keep his mother, and when the child is born, as soon as the child is born, we will kill it. They were very, very afraid. So they attacked Hiranyakashipu's city, kidnapped his wife, Kayadu, and were dragging her away in order to take custody of the child as soon as it is born, that they could slay it, in order that there will not be another Hiranyakashipu number two. And as they were dragging the queen, Kayadu, away, the great Rishi, Narada, who has Trikala Gyan, vision of the past, of the present and the future, he told them, stop, what are you doing? You are mistaken in your idea that this is another demon in her womb. In fact, the child in her womb will be a great Vaishnava, will be a great saint. So you give the queen to me, and I will take care of her, and I will take care of her child. And so Narada, he took the queen to his ashram, where he instructed her, and simultaneously, while instructing her, instructed the child within her womb in bhakti, in devotion. So this is also an important lesson for mothers, for fathers as well, that the consciousness of the child in the womb is affected by the surroundings in the mother's environment. This is not a new idea. It is an ancient Vedic idea, but in today's times in psychology, child psychology, they also not just acknowledge, they emphasize how the emotions of the mother during pregnancy will have effect on the development of the child within the womb, and the surroundings that the mother is in, they will have effect on the child within the womb. They encourage to play soothing music. Sometimes you can buy packages, of CDs to play your baby in the womb. So in the spiritual culture, the Vedic culture, then the mother will read Ramayana, Mahabharata, will read Srimad Bhagavatam, read it aloud to benefit the child within the womb. Similarly, in Mahabharata, there is an account of Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu is the son of Arjun. And so Arjun and Subhadra. So Arjun was explaining to Subhadra some very technical military formation called Chakravyuha. Arjun is explaining to his wife, Subhadra. So Arjun has learned this new amazing military strategy. He's excited. He's come home, sitting with Subhadra, telling her about this phalanx, how it opens, how it closes, how you position the chariot here and the elephants there and the foot soldiers. Really absorbed in what he's explaining, and Subhadra, she doesn't know what he's talking about. She goes, right, sounds really interesting. And she's politely responding to everything Arjuna is saying. At some point she's like, she falls asleep. And Arjuna's like, oh my god, let me find some other military strategist to explain these things to. Now, many, many years later, during the Kurukshetra War, Drona Acharya, he arranged the Chakravyuha, he arranged the core of the forces in this military formation, Chakravyuha. And it just so happened that that day Arjuna was away, or at least at another part of the battlefield. And so Yudhisthira is looking around. Who knows how to penetrate this particular formation? Who knows how to respond to this formation? What it's constructed? Abhimanyu, he raises his hand. He says, well, I know how to get in. He knew, because this had been explained to his mother while he was in the womb. So I know how to get in, but I don't know how to get out. Because before Arjuna could explain how to get out, she fell asleep. So Yudhisthira said, take us in, we'll work out how to get out. And they couldn't work out how to get out. And it was like one of the great tragedies, turning points of the Kurukshetra War, when Abhimanyu, Arjuna's son, was killed in the middle of that formation. So Narada, he instructed Hiranyakashipu's child for months while the child is in the womb in Bhagavat Bhakti. And then in time returned her to the palace, and the child was born as a great saint named Prahlad. Prahlad Maharaj. So once Hiranyakashipu had established his reign, not just of earth but of the heavens, and he had forbade the priests to speak of Vishnu and of bhakti to Vishnu, to Krishna. But then at some point his own son turned out to be a bhakta, a Vaishnava, a saint. And things came to a head when Prahlad was sent to school. As a five-year-old, he was sent to a school where his teachers were Sanda and Amarka. And they were charged with teaching Prahlad about politics and diplomacy, how to make friends, win friends and influence people to control them and manipulate them. Prahlad was being taught these things and he had no interest for them. He said, everyone's my friend. Why am I learning all of these things? How to defeat an enemy? I don't have any enemies. Who's my enemy? Everyone's my brother, everyone's my sister. And he would speak of these things to the other schoolmates. And he says, why are we learning about politics? Why are we learning about how to amass as much wealth as possible when it will be taken from us at the time of death? When it doesn't satisfy the soul. He would speak about these things, and he would say the real value of life is to awaken our spiritual nature. The real value of life is to nurture our eternal relationship. That is our relationship with the Supreme Divine, the Supreme Godhead, with Krishna. That is the real purpose of life. And the boys, this was all described in the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. The boys responded, we can do that when we're older. We're just five now. We want to play. We want to set ourselves up with material prosperity, position and power, and then we can do some devotion when we get older. Prahlad said, no, this is the real important value of life. It can't wait. You don't know how much time you have. You don't know if all this just before you die, we might be old right now. Anything could happen at any time that would end our lives. How do you know when that time may come? This is urgent. Everything else is secondary to this. You may need some wealth to maintain a family in society. You may need some wealth to maintain your life in this world, but the real purpose of living in this world is to become free from it. And more importantly, to reconnect with the Supreme Godhead. So, Prahlad, he would engage his schoolmates in kirtan. He would engage his schoolmates in Hari Kirtan. Teaching them the science of bhakti. So there are nine ways of doing bhakti. You can hear about the Lord. You can chant kirtan, glorification of the Lord. You can remember the pastimes, the activities of the Lord. You can serve the deity of the Lord. You can offer prayers of devotion to the Lord. You can become a humble servant by doing menial services in the temple or in other ways for the Lord. And you can identify yourself as a friend. Shravan, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. Surrender everything to the Lord. These are Prahlad Maharaj's words. Nava Anga Bhakti. Nine ways of doing bhakti. Of them, then hearing and chanting are the most important. So when Prahlad was speaking these things in the school, calling the schoolmates around, calling the other students, speaking all of these things that are opposite to the conclusions of their teachers, the teachers became very afraid. After all, he is forbidden the priests to speak of devotion. He is forbidden them to speak of Vishnu, of Krishna. And one of their students is now propagating it. So they are concerned, so they rush to the palace with the prince, with Prahlad. We didn't do it. We don't know where he's getting this from. And Hiranyakashipu is outraged. His own blood has turned out to be the enemy. His own heir. Not that he thought he would ever need one. Because he, after all, considers himself eternal. Thoroughly chastised the priests, the teachers, Skanda and Amarka, Sandra and Marcus sent them away, took Prahlada on his lap and tried to be a, have a good talk, father to son talk with his, with the boy. Told me, Prahlad, what's the best thing you've learned in school? Like we would say, huh? Some kid coming from school, they would meet them and say, hey, how's school today? That's the line I use. How was school? Tell me what's the best thing. He says, the best thing I've learned is to glorify Vishnu. Everything else is temporary. Hiranyakashipu is outraged. Takes Prahlad, just throws him off his lap, down the stairs, onto the floor, orders the guards to take him away and slay him. He orders him killed. These are experienced killers, so not such a big problem for them, a little five-year-old boy. Prahlad's dragged away, but his hands are folded, and he has a prayer on his lips, a prayer of devotion. He's chanting the holy names of Narayana, the holy names of Vishnu, the holy names of Krishna. And so when they take their swords to cut off his head, the swords are like rubber, so nothing happens with them. No injury whatsoever. When they take their spears to try to pierce him, no effect on Prahlad. Like water off a lotus leaf. You thought I was going to say it, that's fact, didn't you? No effect. So now they're afraid. Oh God, what's going to happen to us? They didn't say, oh God. Oh, Hiranyakashipu, what's going to happen to us? They tried throwing him off a cliff, took him to the highest peak available. The highest known peak, they took him there. Threw him from the top. That should do it. And as Prahlad was falling to the ground, Krishna incarnated midair and caught him and brought Prahlad gently to the earth. They took Prahlad back to Hiranyakashipu. We can't kill him. Throw him into a pit of snakes. Apparently they had a snake pit. Throw him into a pit of snakes. So they threw Prahlad into this pit full of cobras, venomous, and other venomous serpents. And all the while Prahlad was with folded hands, saying prayers of devotion, uttering the holy names, remembering the Lord. And the snakes would not bite him. And the Lord is in the super soul, in the heart of every living being. If he gives the direction, don't bite, they don't bite. Have him trampled by our royal elephant. The royal elephant is the biggest, most powerful of elephants. And get him drunk first, huh? Make the elephant drunk. Apparently, elephants like that. Get the elephant drunk and then let him loose in a compound with Prahlad in the middle. So this drunk elephant goes running wildly into the compound, sees Prahlad and goes down and offers his obeisances. And then lifts Prahlad up with his trunk, places him on top of his head and carries Prahlad in a grand royal procession. That is the direction that the elephant received in the heart from Krishna, from the Super Soul, from Paramatma. What next? Put him into some boiling oil. Bubbling, fry him basically, yeah? They threw Prahlad into the oil. Again, it was of no avail. They tried every trick in the book, every torture in the tyrant's manual of tortures, and none of them were with any success in bringing any harm to Prahlad. And with each failure to harm Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu became angrier and angrier. His rage grew greater and greater. And so finally, Prahlad was dragged back into the royal court before his father's throne. Hiranyakashipu was beside himself with anger, seeing that this five-year-old boy could not be slain. And he asked him, "Prahlad, where do you get your superhuman powers?" It's a competition for Hiranyakashipu. For any great materialist, everything's a competition. So here, this five-year-old has shown more power than him. So he's very angry. "Where do you get your powers?" And Prahlad, with all humility, he says, "The same source as you, father, from Vishnu." Vishnu. Prahlad could not have said anything more disturbing. Vishnu, where is this Vishnu? Where is Vishnu? He's been trying to find Vishnu for a long time to kill him, so that he can be the Supreme Godhead. Where is he? Where on earth, where in heaven is this Vishnu? And Prahlad again with folded hands, he says, "Father, Vishnu is everywhere. Everywhere." "Everywhere? Yes, Father, everywhere." Then Hiranyakashipu, in his anger, he starts pointing at different things in the palace. "You say everywhere? Is he in that vase? Yes, he's in that. Is he in that pillow? Yes, he's in that pillow. There's a pillar standing next to him. Is he in this pillar? Yes, Father, he's in the pillar as well." Hiranyakashipu takes his sword, strikes that. He wants to kill Vishnu by striking the pillar. Destroy God by destroying this pillar. And to his great astonishment and the astonishment of the universe, that pillar makes a thunderous sound that is not merely the sound of crushing stone, crumbling stone. It is so much more powerful than that, and fear-inspiring than that. It's a roar that fills the heavens. And from that pillar emerges this being. This being that is not human, It's not animal. Hiranyakashipu cannot be killed by a human or an animal. This being is not human, it is not animal. It is Narasimha. It is a man, half lion. And roaring, he battles with Hiranyakashipu, Mr. Goldbed. And Hiranyakashipu's armies as well. But that battle is more of a play of cat and mouse. Narasimha, he's angry that his devotee, his bhakta, Prahlad, has been tortured and tormented. That so many have been tortured and tormented and oppressed by Hiranyakashipu. But still, in comparison to the Lord, Hiranyakashipu is like a little mouse. So finally, Narasimha takes him to the veranda. Hiranyakashipu cannot be killed inside or outside. What's the veranda? The balcony. Is it inside? Is it outside? Something in between. And the moment Narasimha chose to end Hiranyakashipu's life was not day, not night, but dusk. The sandhya. We do sandhya vandana, we chant Gayatri mantra. In the morning sandhya, in the noon sandhya, the evening sandhya. So this was the evening sandhya, dusk. When the sun is setting on the horizon, it hasn't quite set. So it's not day, it's not night, it's something in between. And he did not kill him with any weapon, but with his lion's claws. In this way, one of the points we can learn, Narasimha, or God, is beyond any limitation. He defies limitation, defies description. We want to put God into a box. We say he's a man, or we say no, he doesn't have a form, just an impersonal, formless energy. Either way, we are limiting. In some traditions, it is considered an offense to depict the form of the deity. That is considered to be an offense because of limits. No, this cannot be done. You cannot limit the Lord by describing the Lord as having form, because if he has a form, I'm here, then I'm not there. I'm limited in time and space. And then the others, they say, well, how you can say the Lord has no form? How you have a form, how can you have something that the Lord doesn't have? The Lord has a form. And so they argue and fight with each other. Both are wrong. And they are both right. Sometimes people say the Lord has been limited by worshipping the Lord within the deity. How can you say that is God in that space, in carved stone? You have limited the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, he can be present in the deity. The Upanishad explains, Tare jati tanne jati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya taru sarvasya yata. The Lord goes, Tare jati, tanne, but doesn't go. Tad dure, the Lord is very far. Tad dvantike, the Lord is very near. Tadantarasya sarvasya, the Lord is outside of everything. He's away in Goloka Vrindavan, in Vaikuntha. Tadu sarvasya yata, but the Lord is inside of everything, everyone, in every atom, between every atom. So somebody, they read this verse and say, what is this nonsense? He's near, he's not near, he goes, doesn't go, he's far, he's close, he's... Lofty speculations. That's how early Indologists describe the Upanishads. Now the point is very, very eloquent, explaining the Lord as a paradox. Cannot be understood with limited material thinking, conditioned material thinking, beyond all of that. Cannot be limited by Hiranyakashipu's great benedictions. He's beyond that. After killing Hiranyakashipu, then Narasimha, he sat on his throne, that was the throne of Indra, in fact. And he was very angry. The Devas tried to approach, Brahma tried to approach with prayers, Shiva tried to approach with prayers, Lakshmi tried to approach with prayers, Indra tried to, he was angry. They were all afraid to approach him. Finally, Brahma, he gave a garland to Prahlad. He said, you please approach Narasimhadev. So Prahlad, he went forth with this offering. And Prahlad's and Narasimhadev's anger was immediately pacified, subdued. He took Prahlad, kept him on his lap, embraced him in his arms. And so Narasimhadev is worshipped by bhaktas, by devotees, as a protector. He protected Prahlad Maharaj. He protects his devotees. Srila Sridhar Swami explains how the jaws of the cat, they are very fearsome to the mouse or the rat. But those same jaws to the kitten, they are the assurance of all safety. So when the rat or the mouse is in the mouth of the cat, that is death. When the kitten is in the mouth of the mother cat, that is home. That is the greatest assurance of safety and protection. Sridhar Swami says, in the same way, he's a very ancient Bhagavad commentator, some 800 years ago, I believe, at least. Sridhar Swami says, similarly, Narasimhadev, he is very fearsome to the demoniac personality like Hiranyakashipu. But to the bhakta, to the devotee, he is the greatest assurance of protection and safety. So very often when devotees have trouble, then they call to Narasimhadev for protection. And in this temple and in other ISKCON temples around the world, at the end of each aarti, then there is also prayers to Narasimhadev that are sung. And this was in fact established by our spiritual master, our founder spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, in the 1970s, when he was in Los Angeles, then the temple was bombed. Some hooligans bombed the temple. And devotees were very shaken up and afraid. And Prabhupada came down from his quarters to the temple room and told them to sing Narasimhadev prayers. And then there was another occasion when Prabhupada was leaving the United States to India, and he was leaving, it was the first time he was leaving his fledgling movement, just a few years old, and he was returning to India, so there was concern how would the devotees continue without his direct presence. He taught them these Narasimhadev prayers and told the devotees to chant these prayers and be protected. So Chaitanya, he also when Chaitanya was establishing his Sankirtan movement, then Narasimhadev also came to protect the Sankirtan, the Kirtan movement, when it was being oppressed and in jeopardy due to a ruler named Qazi, a Muslim ruler. He had decreed that there should be no Kirtan in his jurisdiction. And so, and he in fact went to the location where a kirtan was taking place, and he smashed, dramatically smashed the mridanga, or mridangas in plural, smashed the mridangas and said, anyone who is caught engaged in kirtan will be punished. This is just a warning, but the next time I will not be, light in dispensing with actual punishment to anyone who is engaged in kirtan. So this was a great challenge. Chaitanya, he was establishing this kirtan of love, inviting everyone regardless of caste and creed, of social position or status, come and do kirtan as brothers and sisters. And now the ruler, who had been pushed actually by the priests, he had decreed that there would be no sankirtan and there would be punishment for anyone who engaged in kirtan. So Chaitanya, he went to, he ordered everyone, he called a civil disobedience march for the next day and said that they should bring torch lamps and mridangas and cymbals and bugles, anything to make a loud noise. And so thousands and thousands of people assembled for this march of kirtan. So they were directly defying the order of the ruler. And they in fact marched on his palace. And when the Qazi saw this kirtan procession approaching his palace, he came inside out of fear. So then Chaitanya, he went in and called out, Qazi, come out, speak with me. He came out in a very humble frame of mind, and Chaitanya and the Qazi spoke for a period. And Chaitanya said, why didn't you send your soldiers? Why didn't you have made such a big proclamation that there will be no kirtan? We're marching in defiance of that, but why haven't you sent any resistance? Qazi said, because last night I had a terrible dream. A man lion pounced on me and put his claws into my chest and said, Qazi, you have disrupted my kirtan. He said, this is a warning. Same thing that Qazi said, this is a warning, next time I'll punish you. This half man, half lion said, this is a warning. Next time I will kill you. Don't disturb my kirtan. So the Qazi told this story to Chaitanya. And then he removed his whatever cloth was covering his chest and showed Chaitanya and everyone that was present that there were in fact claw marks on his chest. So his dream was not so much as a dream, but a real experience with Narasimhadev intervening to once again protect his bhakta, to protect his devotee. So they, all the devotees, Chaitanya said, Jai Narasimhadev ki!
Jai!
Jai Narasimhadev Bhagavan ki!
Jai!
Jai Narasimha Chaturdasi Mahamahotsav ki!
Jai!
Nitai Gaur Premanandi! Okay, now we'll have kirtan, and then there's going to be a drama dance, Narasimhadev dance.